countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, hey! It is now time for the Last Comic Shop Podcast!
That's right, we are opening up the shop and turning on the podcast. I don't know how, since we're a podcast now, not just a shop, but do we open the podcast? Whatever.
Yeah. Keeping the lights on, and let me tell you why we're keeping the lights on. Because this week, I was reading our book, and I thought to myself, man, it would really be nice if I had friends to talk to about comic books. Because I really wanted to talk about this book. And I was like, oh yeah, I do have friends to talk about comic books with. I just have to wait a day until we record the podcast.
Oh, Lord. What are we, co-workers now? We're not your friends anymore?
You're absolutely my friends. I'm a lucky dude. The service we provide, we're the people to talk about comic books with.
Yeah.
Or at least listen in while we do that thing.
And I'm the host with the most, Danny Larson, bringing you all to the Last Comic Shop yet again with my regular co-host, Jay Scott and Chad Smith, as well as somebody that we love to talk comic books with, and that is George from Short Box Summary. Yay!
I honestly can't remember the last time I was on a podcast, even my own podcast. It's yes. So nice to be here.
Just when you thought you were out, we drag you back in.
And I don't have to edit this, and I don't have to upload this. I don't have to write any SEO. I don't do any promotion. I'll retweet, of course. But man, it's so nice. Everyone should be on someone else's show. This is so much.
See, and we Chad, love having you here.
Chad figured that out 6 years ago. He was like, hey, my buddy Andy, he'll just edit everything. I'll just show up on his
show up whatever, as long as he did all the work.
Any case. One thing that I did want to say is, because we are covering the Fantastic Four on this week's show, yeah! This is the beginning of the Merry Marvel March Society.
That's right. Step aside, DC Ember.
That's true. By the end of this year, I'm going to come up with themes for all of the months. It's just going to be one theme after another. It's going to be like Hallmark. It's going to be fine.
I feel like an idiot. I just understood the pun. It'll be 8 more months before you invite me back. I get it, because I'm so bad at calendar math, and I'm so sorry.
But one thing you're not bad at is talking about comic books, George. And I wanted to start off with the opening salvo with talking about the state of Marvel, right? Like, again, I think we're in a particular period where there's a lot of interesting books coming out of Marvel right now. And I wanted to get everybody's take on that prior to our discussion about the Fantastic Four. So let's go ahead and start off with you, George. You're our guest. What do you think of Marvel nowadays?
I am very, very happy with Marvel these days. And I know it's like I record a podcast called Short Box Summary, where all I really do is talk about Marvel from 20 years ago. But I have been catching up on current books, and there's just so much to enjoy about current books. I'm so happy that I get to talk about this series, Fantastic Four, today, because I think this is upper tier current Marvel ongoings. But one thing that I've really been impressed with, Marvel's been crushing it on the miniseries front that I think DC is doing a really good job too, but I think so much of what's to enjoy about Marvel right now isn't even found in its ongoing. So like a couple books that I was reading last year that I really enjoyed, Silver Surfer Ghostlight, just a nice quick 5-issue miniseries about Silver Surfer, and I think it's the Collector, and then I also, who's the weird guy? I believe he's part of Contest of Champions, and then he had like the slick back hair, and he had
not the Grandmaster.
The Grandmaster. I believe the Grandmaster is involved. Bloodline, Daughter of Blade, just like a really nice, like young teen book of introducing the next generation of vampire hunters. Monica Rambeau, Photon, a really, really good Monica Rambeau book, which, man, why isn't that an ongoing? I don't know, but the miniseries is really good. I've been staying pretty clear of the X books, personally.
Waiting for him to clear the decks.
I'll check out a new number one.
But how about the mainline Marvel? Are there any books right now in particular, you know, from the big names, big heroes that are tickling your fancy?
My favorite ongoing that I'm caught up on right now is probably Captain America by J. Michael Straczynski and Jesus Saez. Kind of bummed when this book was announced, because I actually thought that the previous Captain America books, because there was two, But there was one book focused on Sam Wilson and then one book focused on Steve Rogers. And I was loving both those books. There was a big crossover called Cold War. I thought, I was like, wow, this is really fun. This feels like 90s, like high energy. And then it was announced that those creative teams were leaving. The Sam Wilson book was ending. And there's just going to be one Steve Rogers Cap book from JMS and Jesus Says. And I was like, oh, man, JMS, he's old. He doesn't have his, he doesn't have his fastball anymore. And you guys, I am pleasantly relieved to tell you, JMS still has his fastball. He is weaving one heck of a yard that feels like it's treading on familiar ground. It feels kind of Brubaker adjacent, just in terms of like this conspiracy that's bubbling underneath the surface of like what you thought you knew about the Marvel Universe. And then also it's kind of touching on, you remember when they made Cap a Hydra sleeper agent and everyone was really mad?
They lost their stuff.
Yeah, I didn't mind those books. I was like, oh, it's different. It's cool. I mean, he turned into a werewolf once. Like, we're going to pretend that, like, nothing's possible with Cap. Okay. But this book, like, it has him going to, like, these Nazi rallies and just starting stuff up with Nazis, just, like, being a skinny little punk. And then he kind of lives in a brothel. And then all these women are just fawning over themselves about, like, oh, what a good man, Steve Rogers. Like, it's just, like, it's just really, like, everything enjoyable about watching, like, A League of Their Own just feels right at home here. Like, they did such a good job of, like, nailing the tone. I love that book. I'm really enjoying it. I think the first five issues are out right now.
So you're going to have to keep me updated on that, because JMS is a guy where my track record with him is always he starts very strong,
mm-hmm.
and then he goes off the rails at some point. So I'm not shocked to hear that he's got a really good start. I will want that update to know, does he follow through and get you a good, complete story in there?
Yeah. Two more books I want to just shout out really quick. Loving the, believe it's Benjamin Percy written Ghost Rider book. I was never,
I've heard great things about that.
Never a huge Ghost Rider fan, but this book has its teeth into me. And I believe there's a soft relaunch coming soon. I think it's the same creative team where they're supposed to be introducing a new Ghost Rider. And Moon Knight by Jeb McKay. And then some Italian artist whose name I don't even want to butcher by trying to pronounce it. But yeah. So good. Anything Jed McKay writes really is worth picking up. He might be my new A-lister at Marvel.
Heck yeah. And Moon Knight's into like, is it into the 30s yet? It's got to be around there.
It was around there. And then I think they just rebooted it with a new Moon Knight at issue one called Vengeance of the Moon Knight.
Okay. But yeah, that's been like just quietly chugging along. That's a really great series for the last couple of years. I'm with you on that one too.
Well, let's turn it over to you, Chad. What's tickling your fancy over there in Marvel?
Oh boy. So I do think this is a very fertile time. There are lots of really great books. There's some books that I'm digging that not everybody else is. I think on a previous show I talked about Guardians of the Galaxy and the Groot Fall storyline, where they think Groot is a bad guy, and then they discover what's going on there, and like it has all the heart of the classic Marvel team books out there. The other one that I was excited to talk about a little bit was just the Ultimate Universe. You've got Jonathan Hickman, who is steering the ship, and the new direction involves the Maker. You know, it's all about the evil Reed there, who has unmade so many of the heroes. And what do you guys think about the reboot of the Ultimate Universe, only this time, instead of it being a continuity-free re-examination of what's going on, now it's like, no, you need to know the alternate Reed from another universe that was destroyed. But Miles Morales was from there, but he survived because he, what's Malcolm his name, a sandwich?
Cheeseburger. Yeah. No. Well, first off, I will say this. Anytime you've got Jonathan Hickman writing Reed Richards in any shape or form, it's going to be golden. I feel like Jonathan Hickman is pretty much pitch perfect when it comes to what makes Reed great. Even more than even the writer we're going to talk about today. Like Ryan North, I will be very honest. I think he nails a lot of the other characters. I'm still a little bit iffy on his Reed, and I think that's really because Jonathan Hickman did Reed so well. Evil Reed, Maker Reed, Bad Guy Reed, trying to change all the universe and reshuffle a deck and getting rid of all the superheroes. I love it. Like, give me more of that. That's equal and opposite Reed. That's like closer to Dr. Doom Reed, and that's fine with me. And plus, it gives me my Peter Parker with a beard and Mary Jane and kids, and that's just...
That's what I was going to ask you about. And that was a book that went crazy, like the olden days. It wasn't a book that, like, speculators were into it for first appearances. Like, it just naturally showed up, and, like, people went mad. It became super collectible. But it's right up your alley, Andy, because it gives you Family Man, Spider-Man.
Some people were asking whether I was going over or under, whether or not Jonathan Hickman is going to write 10 issues before he, like, there's a fill-in. And I think it's going to happen, because I think there's a larger storyline going on here, and he is crafting something that's going to take a little bit of time. I'm good with at least two trades out of Jonathan Hickman before maybe somebody steps in. But simply put, everything about this Ultimate Spider-Man universe makes sense to me. I love the fact that, like, Peter Parker's back at the Daily Bugle. He's back as a reporter, which I get it that, like, he's a science guy and some other people play with the science thing, like him being a science teacher or running his own company, like with Dan Slott. But, like, to me, he's like Clark Kent. He belongs in that newspaper. It allows him to get into situations a lot easier, like in terms of, like, oh, there's bad guys. It's because I got to go and report on this or take pictures. Like, it just makes more sense. And to have Ben come back and to have maybe the one that passed away. I think over or under whether Ben's going to survive, guys, I guess that's the big question. Let's start off with J.A. Over or under on that?
He's going. Come on. Let's be honest here.
How many issues?
I don't know, four issues maybe.
You think he doesn't make it out of the first trade?
I don't think so. I think, no, he's the catalyst to kick off the second trade, so it'll be issue five then, right? They do there five issue trades.
George, over and under on six issues, I guess.
Here's the deal. I would either take the under. I think you're right. I think issue five. I don't know. I feel like if he doesn't die by issue five, he's not going to die, though. Like, it's just got to be different, right? Because it's like, what would be more different than Uncle Ben not dying? Also, man, that friendship between him and J. Jonah Jameson doesn't just make you love J. Jonah Jameson. Like, it feels like on the West Wing, like the president and his chief of staff, Leo?
Leo, yeah.
Leo.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one, man. The J. Jonah Jameson and Ben relationship and watching them, and like, and Ben is just so wise and cuts to the quick. On one hand, I don't know how you can keep that going. I don't know how much wisdom Jonathan Hickman has stored up to let Ben keep conveying. On the other hand, would I love to see him just keep rolling? I would. And so I'm going to take the over. I hope Ben is around for a good long time. I just hope nothing happens to JJJ, because he's also probably my favorite character in all the comics, no matter what form. They'd all be played by J.K. Simmons anyway. So, yeah.
There was a rumor that it was going to be Maya Rudolph as the J. Jonah Jameson. And, like, man, I think that was a huge missed opportunity by not doing that. I think she would have crushed it.
Listen, I love Maya Rudolph. I'm a huge Saturday Night Live fan. But there is no better casting in any movie anywhere than J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson.
Okay.
Every universe. Lego universe, J.K. Simmons. Ultimate universe, MCU, Sony universe, it's all J.K. Simmons. It's just whether or not he has hair, what his mustache looks like.
Sure.
Well, before we get to the Fantastic Four book, J.A., your thought now?
Poor guy. We've been talking all this stuff about Hickman, and he's just been biting his lip. I'm seeing it start to bleed over there.
I don't know. I'm glad Marvel's finally wrapping up, probably 2 years too late, the whole Krakoan age in X-Men. They got so invested in having a big book that everyone's talking about that when Hickman was like, yep, time to go, that's it. They're like, no, let's keep this gravy train going. You can leave. We're going to keep this story going and going. And it started to wear pretty thin by the end. So I'm glad that they're finally bringing it to a close and we can get rid of the fact that the X-Men can't die and they get reborn with golden balls and all this other stuff. And ready for a reboot of the whole X universe. So interested to see where they go with that. I wouldn't mind a return to some more standalone books where you get some standalone stories that doesn't have to all plug into this massive conspiracy theory. And I'm still holding out for the Hickman-inspired X-Men omnibus that is just the inserts and the typed-up pages.
All the graphs. Come on.
All the graphs and the reports. I just want an omnibus of reports.
I've never read one of those. I've never read one.
They already did that when they collected his series, The Nightly News, which that is the comic book. It's just him doing infographics.
Yes, see?
Well, I have some thoughts on Marvel, but I'm going to save them for recommendations later in the show. We got to get to this review of Fantastic Four. So we'll be right back with more of The Last Comic Shop right after these commercial breaks with Ryan North's Fantastic Four. Yes, like I think it's like 14 issues we read. Shrugs. We'll be right back with that.
Hi, it's Carlo Calentuan, Last Comic Shop podcast listener and comic book tragic here in the Philippines. Mabuhay. When I'm in the U.S., I'm always on the lookout for a good deal on boards, bags, boxes, and all other manner of comic book-related supplies. And that's why I love to go to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD to get 10% off of all my orders. Not only do I get a discount on everything I buy at BCW, but I'm able to support the podcast when I use LCSPOD at checkout. So if you're in need of comic book supplies, head over to bcwsupplies.com and use the promo code LCSPOD. Oh, and guys, I'm still waiting for that Tressy review. Come on, when is it?
What happens when 20-something Madison is zapped into old-time radio shows? No technology.
Why won't it go to voicemail?
No Starbucks.
Don't call yourself a coffee shop if you only sell drip coffee.
And no one is PC.
I don't need no lip from.
Were you about to say woman? Because I'm wearing a gun and I have no idea how to use it.
Madison on the Air serves to highlight the way we were and the way we are today with original radio drama scripts adapted to include the modern-day Madison as she joins famous characters from radio's past, including Sergeant Joe Friday.
Just the facts, ma'am.
I've never actually said that.
Marshal Matt Dillon.
We're not having a shootout with a 10-year-old kid.
I'm too woke to be a part of this.
Superman.
I didn't realize how cold it would be flying like this.
I have to get into the higher atmosphere.
And many more. Visit us on the web at madisonontheair.com or find us pretty much any place podcasts can be found.
You talk so old-timey. I have no idea what you said, but it's adorbs.
All right, we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time to get fantastic. That's right. It is our read pile review for this week. And to kick off the Merry Marvel March Society, why not kicking it off with the comic book that kickstarted that Marvel Age? That's right, the Fantastic Four, the world's greatest comic magazine. That's right. It's written by Ryan North nowadays, but some folks are helping Ryan North, and who would those folks be, J.A.?
Mainly Iban Coelho and Ivan Fiorelli on art duties, with Leandro Fernandez stepping in occasionally. Color was provided by Jesus Abertov, and VC's Joe Caramanga on letters, with cover art by Alex Ross, and also he did the costume design. Something I've never seen in a comic before. Somebody get a credit for doing the costumes.
Hey, when you're Alex Ross,
usually yeah, that's just you did the art. You drew the guy.
And what about those covers, man? They are some of those are just. I saw Alex Ross with Fantastic Fours versus Dinosaurs, and I was like, okay, fine, take my money here.
Oh man, and I try not to, because we live in the age of FOMO. I try not to be a variant cover guy, but sometimes it gets me. Two issues, 7 and 8, are both double page foldouts by Scott Koblish, Rochelle Rosenberg. It's every character basically that's ever appeared in a Fantastic Four comic book. As much credit as we can give to Alex Ross, I think Scott Koblish, just for those two covers, where it's like, it has to be 40 million characters.
Yeah. Well, by the way, this is your pick this month for the Merry Marvel March Society, Chad.
Heck
so
yeah.
Why don't you hit us up with that 10-cent synopsis?
So, well, that's the fun part about this, is this Fantastic Four book, it's different than most of the books out there on the shelves currently, in that most of the stories are like one or two issue things, and then they move on to the next thing. But it starts, and the big conceit is that everyone is PO'd at the Fantastic Four, because there was a battle, there was an invasion, and in order to save everybody and to expel the aliens, Reed basically takes a citywide block and launches it into some sort of time-space scenario where it'll come back in a year, and everybody inside that city block is going to be safe, but it disappears from New York City for a year. His kids are in that building. Ben and Alicia's kids are in that building. So when that happens, everybody gets pissed at Reed. Everybody gets pissed at the Fantastic Four, including Ben and Alicia, including Johnny Storm. And so when the series starts, everyone has gone their separate ways. Okay. And for the first couple of issues, they're all off on their solo adventures. The first issue is a really cool one. It's like a Twilight Zone-esque, like Groundhog Day story, where Ben and Alicia are in a bar where there's a time loop and they have to figure out what's going on. And the second issue is Reed and Sue, and they go to a town. The town is filled with Doombots. You get Johnny Storm busting up a bad boss, which Johnny Storm, by the way, in this series, gets a terrible new mustache.
I love the handlebar.
Looks pretty good. Yeah.
That was pitch perfect, Johnny Storm, right there.
But yeah, and so eventually the Fantastic Four get back together. The Thing realizes that Reed made that choice because it was the only choice to be made, and they make amends. And they go, they're going to spend some time at Aunt Petunia's to clear their heads. And along the way, there's this guy called Nicholas Scratch who comes in. And he's like, I've got this nefarious magic scheme. And he magics the Fantastic Four into this fourth dimension that has mirror molecules. And oh, no, we need to figure out what to do. We need to solve this problem. And so how do they solve the problem? Johnny has a bright idea. Let's cancel out the sun for 3 days. They do. And that pisses people off even more. So now people really hate the Fantastic Four. And then they get to the town, and the town is weird, and it's controlled by this wood god lady. And we're introduced to a new Fantastic Four, which consists of Alicia, Sue, Johnny, and Johnny's compatriot Flamo, which is just Johnny finding a new way to use his powers to create a flame-based superhero. And I should mention, throughout the course of this book, you're seeing the Fantastic Four stretch how they use their powers in new and unique ways all the time. Issue 10 is a weird sci-fi story.
That was one of the best
ones. Was the second best one. That was the second best
one. Second best one?
Ah. Yeah, the Doctor Doom one was by far the best.
I don't know. I think we're going to have an argument here.
Yeah, all right. We'll get back. So we'll just say that's the sci-fi story on a ship that's stuck in a time warp and the Fantastic Four trying to help. It just doesn't seem that way. And then there's another guy who's trying to rob the Fantastic Four, so he traps them all in these illusions. But Ben figures it out with the help of his little dog.
That's actually the best one, by the way.
There you go.
I couldn't help thinking when I was reading that dog, oh, he's a nifty man.
And that's not just some guy. That's Miracle Man.
Mr. Miracle, not whatever. Miracle Man.
He's from issue 3 of the Fantastic. He was one of the first baddies, even before Doom. Come on.
Jonathan Ayer, Mr. Miracle.
Wait, Marvel has a Mr. Miracle too? Come on.
The best issues are issues 12 and 13, a Secret Wars-style incursion where their planets are melding with another planet. But it turns out that planet, everybody's dinosaurs. Doom and Dino Doom decide they're going to team up and they're going to merge both universes and rule them at the same time. So there's a bunch of different one-and-done stories in here. I've talked a lot. Somebody else.
I'm glad we all cleared out and just let Chad cook. That was like the flu game. Just watching Chad be on his own for what, 38 beautiful minutes, which is the same amount of points Michael Jordan had in the flu game.
Thank you, sir.
Beautiful, Chad.
Yeah, but you're right. There's like so many little tiny stories going on in these issues. Some of which work, some of them don't. I think that's going to start where my initial thoughts is as some people may or may not know, I'm a massive fan of the Fantastic Four. I've read them tons. I think I was one of the few people that was reading that Tom DeFalco run in the 8 with the boob outfit and all that
stuff. You just read it for the window.
No, I didn't.
For the articles.
I was actually enjoying that at the time, slightly. I mean, Thing had to wear a mask because Wolverine like cut up his face. Like, it was super weird stuff.
That made sense.
Here I am. Every single time there's a reboot of the Fantastic Four, I jump on because I'm like, okay, what are they going to do with the Fantastic Four next? And I'm of two minds of this particular run. The main reason I love this run, unlike some other writers, the Fantastic Four aren't, I would say, superheroes in this, right? They're investigators. They're scientists. They pretty much go to kind of weird phenomenon, alien races. They kind of explore and say like, well, what's going on here? Can we figure out this? And some of the issues are just about like, I don't know, figuring out what's going on and what kind of sciencey stuff may be causing certain phenomena. So it's kind of like, I don't know, like the X-Files or something.
Yeah, they're Doctor Who, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what the Fantastic Four were at times during the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby run. There's a reason why they struggle when they think about like the Fantastic Four Rogues Gallery. They're like, I don't know, Puppet Master, Doctor Doom, Mole Man, Shrugs. And then they kind of stop. It's because, like, really, some of the issues were, like, the Infant Terrible, where, like, this super powerful alien comes down to Earth, and the Fantastic Four are like, why the heck does he keep on destroying everything? That's because he's a kid, and so they're waiting for his parents to come back. But that's a classic Jack Kirby, Stan Lee Fantastic Four story. And you get the same thing here with Ryan North. It's, you go to a town, and it's filled with Doombots. It's not about battling the Doombots, it's figuring out why the hell are they there? And so with that in mind, it does become kind of a hit or miss thing. I could care less about the molecule stuff. And that Johnny Storm issue with the boss, I was just like, eh, I don't know about this. But then you hit some gems and it makes up for it. You're in this formula where not all the stories hit, but I kind of like the theme. Like, I kind of like the idea of just like throwing things out there and seeing what sticks.
I love the theme, I mean, especially coming off of X-Men, where everything had to connect to this grand scheme and everything was related to the whole idea of Krakoa that Hickman had set up. And it started to feel suffocating. And I'm sure it was for some of the writers at the end, too, having to sort of be stuck within this story arc. And Ryan North able to break away completely from that, even pulling him out of New York, I think, is a genius move, too. So you get a bit of, you know, the flyover states of America type thing and a small town, and does have a bit of David Carradine's Kung Fu, or, you know, those X-Files where you get a monster of the week or a mystery of the week type thing. And I loved it. I loved that. From one story to the next, I didn't have to remember 20 different things and who had died and who was coming back and what golden ball was going to resurrect what hero at what point.
Man, you're really pissed about those balls.
What did you think, George?
I really liked it. I was a huge Fantastic Four fan because of the Hickman run. That was the first time it really clicked for me. When I first started reading the comics, it was the end of the Wade era, and then it was like right when Mike McCone and J. Michael Straczynski took over, and they were only there like really through Civil War. After that, I think it was Dwayne McDuffie and Paul Pelletier, and then after that, it was like Mark Millar and Brian Hitch. So like I was pretty used to like flux in my Fantastic Four teams. Like it really felt like everyone stuck around for like around a year, just based on when I started reading in high school. And then the Fantastic Four kind of just like went away after the Hickman run, right? Like Secret Wars, like they just weren't around for a couple years. And I just like felt a void in my life because Hickman made me fall in love with these characters. The thing I didn't like about this run was that it felt like it started off the exact same as the last run, where it's like everyone was separate, everyone wasn't together, and like that is obviously their strengths, and like the reason you pull the Fantastic Four apart is so you can put them back together. But I was personally a little frustrated that it started off the same way as the last run, and it does my least favorite storytelling mechanic, where like, you know when a movie starts and it's like this kick-ass action sequence, and then it's like 3 days earlier. And it's like, dude, like if you were so concerned about the beginning of your movie being boring, why didn't you just make a better beginning to your movie and then like let the sequence that takes place in the middle of your story happen in the middle of your story? So I was a little frustrated to not see the action in real time about like why everyone was pissed at the Fantastic Four and why Ben was so pissed at Reed and why everyone had split up. That said, though, I think you're right. I think it hits on some like the best qualities of one of my favorite comic book series, Planetary, where it is like each issue just like takes this huge idea and then boils it down to 22 pages. And so like that Doombot episode, or sorry, issue was incredible, right? Like this entire town of sympathetic Doombots, just because like this old woman fed a collegiate Victor Von Doom. Incredible stuff. And I was teasing earlier, I do really love that episode. I keep saying that. Sorry. It feels very contained and episodic in a way that I'm not used to with modern comics. But that issue where, like, I said that was my personal favorite, where Ben was falling through the hole with Mr. Miracle's illusion, I personally love that issue just because it, like, made Ben seem like the smartest person in the room. Granted, he was the only person in the room besides, like, a little Havanese dog. But when he was actually figuring out the air pressure and the fact that he was able to, like, punch holes in the illusion, I'm like, wow, that's really cool, Ben. But that Doctor Doom issue where, like, they were losing the ability to say letters, like, slowly, and then the only letters they had left were M, O, and D, and then, like, they open the door and they're like, Doom! I was like, oh, that's such good storytelling. Like, it's so cheesy and lame, but in the best possible way.
Yes, and then Doom's like, I'm going to fix this, Reed, because you stuck my goddaughter. Yeah. And then he can't do it. And he gets so angry at himself.
It
proves the point of some folks with, like, the current plan for the big MCU, which is like, why are you doing storylines with Kang? Do a time travel story with Doctor Doom, because it'll be infinitely better. And that was. Well, I got to go back even further, because, like, I gotta make sure that doesn't happen. And, like, is this really the best outcome for that Doom is ever going to have? Like, things are not going to get ever any better for Doom, and he just can't see that 2 feet in front of his face that, like, Doom, you're just not perfect, man. Like, which is great, because that is the fifth member of the Fantastic Four. You cannot have a solid Fantastic Four book if you don't nail Doom, and I think Ryan North nailed Doom. Chad?
Yeah, no, I love this. This book does something for me that a lot of other modern comics aren't, and that each issue, you're getting the Fantastic Four and their dynamic. Each issue usually has some kind of, like, science-y theme where, like, I feel like I'm kind of almost learning something. See the Thing explore, you know, his pilot skills to help solve a problem. You know, he's sciencing. You see Johnny Storm coming up with science-based solutions. You know, these are science adventure stories, and they're not belabored. We mentioned how, you know, he borrows the plot of Secret Wars, and it's done in 2 issues. And they're so imaginative and so creative. And the family dynamic and all the stuff that you love about the Fantastic Four is all there. There's no other comic book out there right now that I think is doing it this way. And, you know, we just talked about Superman a couple of shows back, and how Superman is doing that thing where they are writing stories that are accessible for everybody. I think Fantastic Four is harkening back to a similar age of comics, you know, similar to the Stan and Jack era. You wouldn't get long, belabored story arcs, but you would get idea after idea after idea just thrown at you. You're there for an issue, and then you're done. And then the next crazy idea happens, and you're there for an issue or two, and then you're done. There's so much about this I love, except for the art. The art's kind of eh. But everything else about this book, I love. What
the hell are you talking about? The art's kind of eh.
Is it the art that's kind of eh, or the fact that they did all that body dysmorphication that I don't know what you would even call it?
The body horror of Reed Richards, I think, is immaculate in this book. It is so incredibly cool. It's the most uncomfortable I've ever felt reading the Fantastic Four. It's the first time Fantastic Four has felt like a horror comic to me. It's just like seeing everything he does. There's one issue where he's like examining the Doombots, where he like sucks his eyeballs out of his head and then projects them through his fingers so he can get a closer look at the Doombot. There's one issue where he actually just like telescopes his eye out of his like orbital bone and then just like examines the algae in the water just to see if it's there. There's so much weird stuff this dude does with his body that feel like I've never seen before. In the issue where we find out what happened to the building and what happened to their kids, there's dozens of hands protruding from his body so he can work faster trying to like hammer out the calculations.
Like Doctor Strange style. You see him projecting out of everything.
It's disgusting and wonderful and weird. And like it should be there, where like there's the hominess to this book that I really love, like the element of family. Alicia and Thing, perfect couple. Sue is just like such an amazing partner. Reed, you can tell he's like a caring dad. I think one really interesting element, though, you're right, like you, Andy, when you were saying that like Reed is like a little underdeveloped as far as like the other characters go, but like I almost wonder if that is just to be like Reed can't define himself as much as everyone else can define Reed's place in their life, right? Like, it was when Alicia and Thing realized that Reed was hurting too, right? When they were stuck in the weird alien testicles, right? Like, let's call them what they were. And they were in those, like, little testy pods. And they were amplifying the trauma so that they could steal their genetic information so this little alien parasite could rebuild itself. And then amplified everything, including just, like, the emotions that Reed was feeling from their traumatic experience. And it's like, that is how Reed is defined. It's like a cold, distant father that you don't understand. But like, the reality is that, like, if this person is this smart and this logical and seemingly detached, like, he would be hard to understand. So the fact that everyone else can define his place in their life, and like, that's the portrait we're getting of Reed Richards, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I think it's really sweet. I do think that there's probably going to be, because we haven't gotten like one Reed Richards solo issue yet, right? Like, we've gotten Sue independent of Reed, we've gotten Sue with Reed, we've gotten Sue with Johnny even, but we haven't had Reed independent.
Right. But I will say that there was so much Hickman that was just Reed, right? Like, the Council of Infinite Reeds. I mean, gosh, you had whole issues with just how many Reeds can you stack on one page? So, like, I'm okay with taking a break from Reed a little bit, having him in the background. I think from the body morphification of Reed, the most disturbing thing for me was he didn't look old at times. I'm like, I miss the beard. I really do. I think after they introduced the beard on Reed Richards, I'm like, no, like, he's a bearded character now. Like, that makes him look fatherly, and, you know, that ages him up. And I'm sorry, that's just the way he looks now. No,
Steve Rogers needs a beard. Peter Ultimate, Peter
Everyone
Parker,
needs
love
a beard.
Him.
They should all have beards, David.
The matching scruff. But no, we jumped off the point. You were talking about Reed and how detached Reed is, and Council Reed. They do bring up Raoul Reed and his tacos on one issue later on. But speaking of things that are detached, because we initially started talking about the art, Thing does not have a neck, and it drives me crazy.
No, they made a joke about that.
I know.
One of the issues.
It's on purpose, but it drives me crazy.
I
don't
understand.
It's just floating there.
But I will say this, like, the nice thing about this series, to George's point about, like, the weird looking Reed Richards, and like, there's an issue in space where Sue Storm slowly appears, and you see her brain first, and then her eyes, and like, her muscles, and
she Dr. Manhattan's,
super creepy. It kind of plays into something that was brought up during the Immortal Hulk run by Al Ewing, which they kept on talking about how the Fantastic Four were always closer to the Hulk than they were the Avengers. Why? Because they're monsters too. Sure, they may look more human than some of the other monsters, but definitely Thing's a monster. The other guy's in fire. The other person can turn invisible, and the other guy can now, I don't know, put his eyeballs through his fingers. Like, they're monsters. That's why they're figuring out monster problems, because, you know, in essence, that's what they are. And I think that's great.
And it wasn't just that they're monsters. I do like that Ryan North has been playing with their powers a bit. I think he kind of took this from the X-Men, where they're combining, seeing what Sue and Johnny could do together, twisting it a bit, and let's look at how we can do their powers differently. Like, when Sue Storm pretended she was burnt, but they explained how she did it, how she changed the molecules and made her skin partially transparent so you could see her muscles, but then made them darker so they look like they were burnt. And I was like, that's kind of disgusting but cool at the same time.
Yeah.
So I really got into that. I like they isn't just taking, you know, the Fantastic Four as we've always known them, but saying, well, what could you do if you actually thought about what these powers actually are?
Yeah, you wouldn't make flame cages all the time. Do something else. Make a hotter fire and call it Nova Flame. Let's just
I did like Flamo. I loved in that issue then when there were the Fantastic Four was Johnny Storm and three Flamos.
Yeah, he knew there was four. He just didn't know who the other ones were. They had to be Flamos.
All right. Well, we've got our Fantastic Four coming back with more Last Comic Shop right after these commercial breaks. We'll be back with ratings as well as quick recommendations to wrap up the first week of the Merry Marvel March Society. Stay tuned.
LastComicShopPodcast.com is the destination for all things shop. Plan your week with upcoming show schedules, the latest books, recommendations, and chatter from the crew. Subscribe to the show on all major podcasting platforms from one convenient location. Show your support and browse the merch store. T-shirts, tanks, hoodies for the fam, coffee mugs, magnets, totes, and more. Check out exclusive content through the show's YouTube channel and follow the pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, and others. All this and so much more at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
Hey everybody, this is Nerd Bomber here, one of the co-hosts of the Online Warriors podcast. Our weekly podcast started as a way for three friends to keep in touch and discuss their passion for movies, gaming, technology, and entertainment. And since then, we've grown into a fantastic online community. Every Wednesday, we release a new episode discussing the latest nerdy news, and then we go hands-on with our weekly adventures and a fun trivia show. Sound interesting? Check us out on every podcast platform, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or hit us up at OnlineWarriorsPodcast.com.
All right, we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for ratings, where we don't need Herbie the Robot to give us a 1 out of 4 scale. We've got Jay Scott. He's just as good. It's Herbie, the robot. What's our 1 out of 4 scale this week for the Fantastic Four by Ryan North?
Because it was such a fun episode, we'll go 1 out of 4.
Now see, you got me, George.
It's infectious. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
1 out of 4 Doombots for that Doombot issue,
which we talked about a lot more than what everybody else I thought was gonna, which was the Groundhog's Day issue. Like Chad led with that. Heavy. He was like, that Groundhog's Day issue is the best. And then we talked about the Doombot one more. But I'm going to go first. I'm going to give this a solid 3. I can't give it a 4 because I think for me personally, that is reserved for certain Fantastic Four runs. They basically run their course and I know how great they are, right? That's Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. That's the Jonathan Hickman run leading up to Secret Wars. That's John Byrne's run on Fantastic Four, which I think is actually kind of more like a 3.75 than a 4, but still, that's super good. This is still too early. And one of the biggest reasons I'm only giving it a 3 is because it was hit or miss. There were some issues, like that issue with Johnny Storm, with him getting a job. Didn't care about that issue. I glossed over it for the most part. It had certain moments that were good. There were other issues. Like, again, I didn't really care about the molecules. But then there were really some issues that really stood out and were like, these are some of the best Fantastic Four issues I've read in a long time. Whether it was the Doombot issue, whether it was the space issue, whether it was parts of the dinosaur issue. Like, I actually liked the second part with Doom and the T-Rex Doom than the first part. And I even kind of sort of liked the Wood God person, because I just like anytime they bring back characters from like Tales to Astonish in the Marvel monster era, that's just kind of neat when they incorporate those characters in. If something's hit or miss, right, it can't be great, it can't be a 4, like it has to be good. And so, like, I'm excited to see what Ryan North continues to do with the Fantastic Four. I hope this trend of just writing individual issues continues, because I think it's working for this book and it harkens back to the really good days of the Fantastic Four. So, yeah, you should pick it up and read it. It's good. 3 Doombots. J.A.
I'm giving it 3.5 Doombots. I really enjoyed it. I liked that it was a bit more episodic from issue to issue. And
good word. Yeah.
Thank you, George. I thought you'd like that. I appreciated what Ryan North was trying to do, stretching the characters, sometimes literally, not just figuratively. And also, you didn't know what you were getting from issue to issue. I liked that it was you didn't know if you were getting a fastball or a changeup. It was fresh going in, and I haven't had that from Marvel, and it might be because I've been reading all of this X-Men. Am I burned out on that a little bit by now? Yes. So it was a nice change of pace. A superhero team that admittedly I don't probably read enough of and haven't been, because it's sometimes hard to get into or care about. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this, bro. I'm glad that, Chad, you recommended it.
All right. Well, Chad, you're up next. What is your rating?
So I'm going to bump it up a little higher just because this is what I want out of comic books. I can pick up an issue, I can read a story, and it's filled not only just with incredible imagination. You know, you have those science elements. You have the teamwork. You have the family elements. You have the heart. You have the hope in these stories. And like, oh my goodness, comparing this to however many grim and gritty books and like explorations of darkness. No, there's an issue with dinosaurs. There's an issue in a starship. There's an issue in a small town. Like Jay alluded to, you're going from place to place to place, and you never know where you're going to go next. And, you know, it's not mapped out. And every issue, I think, is a thoughtful exploration of something. And do some swings connect more than others? Sure. I'm with you, Andy. I thought the first two issues were really solid, and then the Johnny Storm issue was eh. And then you get to the issue where you find out what really happened. Like, oh, okay. And then there's an issue where it slows down a little bit and speeds up. There's a lot there, but isn't that what you want out of comics? Where every month there's something new, you don't know what to expect, and you're sure it might work better sometimes than others, but overall, like, I can't wait for this book to come out every month. I can't wait to, you know, for that next story. And the Fantastic Four themselves, they're characters where I'm not ride or die on Fantastic Four. There are runs that I really enjoy, you know, the Stan and Jack, the Walt Simonson, the Hickman run, Fraction and All Red on the Future Foundation was really fun. But the Fantastic Four always lose me eventually. As long as Ryan North is writing this book, I'm in. It's so thoughtful each time out. My biggest gripe, like I said, it's the art doesn't do it for me. Could I think of an artist that would be more conducive than Ivan Coelho? Nothing springs to mind, so I feel bad being like, oh, there should be somebody better. Who do you want? Like, I don't know. But the storytelling is great. There's just something about the finish where, like, maybe it's something where, you know, five issues down the road, it's finally going to connect with me. But I just feel like, as great as the writing and imaginative as the storytelling is, there's something about the art that isn't there yet. So it's a 3.75.
Okay. George, wrap us up.
I give it a 3. I don't mean that pejoratively. Like, I'm with you, Andy, where, like, I feel like there's runs above this where I can picture someone reading this book and, like, I'm reading this book and all I can think about is, like, man, I should really reread that Hickman run, you know. I should really go back. I've never finished the John Byrne run. I should probably go back and get back to the Trial of Reed Richards, see what's going on there. I think it's a really, really good starter for the series. Like, I think it's a great first Fantastic Four book, but I'm not sure it's hitting what I feel like are the heights of Fantastic Four. And I say that with the utmost respect for this book. I think this book is great. It has risen to the top of my pull list every month. I am in for the ride because, like you said, this is just such an enjoyable way to explore the Marvel Universe. I think what's most interesting is, like, it times reads like an all-ages book, right? Like, one of the first Fantastic Four books I remember reading was a Marvel age book in, I must have been like 13 or 14, and I was just like going to the store and just grabbing every issue number one, thinking I would be less confused and not understanding the difference between like different imprints at Marvel. And I grabbed one where it was just Fantastic Four, Black Panther number one, without realizing that that was an all-ages book where it's like them fighting Claw. And I was like, man, this book is awesome. Like, this is just nothing but like gas. Like, everyone's bright and colorful. Everyone's in like a good mood, and it put me in a good mood. And this book puts me in a good mood while it also follows the Marvel trend of every book slowly becoming a horror comic at Marvel at the same time. Like, I gotta be honest, spoilers for Captain America, dude's fighting a demon the entire time. And it's like a literal demon from hell. It's like, it's not really Cap's repertoire, which is interesting. So I'm into it, but also, so, like, Immortal Hulk was kind of a Ghost Rider comic in a Hulk shell, right? Like, let's be, like, a little honest. But, like, this one is at least, like, sci-fi interesting. It's got, like I said earlier, shades of Doctor Who, shades of Planetary from Warren Ellis and John Cassaday. So I'm in for this book, but I also think that, like, this is a great intro and not upper echelon Fantastic Four yet, but I'm thrilled with it so far. Room to grow.
There you go. And room to grow on your comic book shelf is some of our recommendations. Yes. This time of every single show, we give you other comic books in addition to all of the issues of Ryan North's Fantastic Four, which you can get in trades. I think the first two trades are out. And otherwise, just find the issues. Man, you can just pick up a couple here and there. You don't have to read all the stories like Chad made us do this week.
I told you didn't have to read them all. I said that
well,
once
I wanted you could skip, to. But then you were like, start at the beginning, and those were good stories, and then I got to the Johnny. Long story short, here are some other recommendations, and we're going to go ahead and start off with Jay Scott. So, Jay, what do you got this week for for us?
So I am recommending some of the Silver Surfer Epic Collection. This is Parabellum. It is issues 15 through 23 of Volume 3 of Silver Surfer. This is actually the first issues that Ron Lim penciled in the Silver Surfer run, in his long Silver Surfer run. So it's Ron Lim and Steve Englehart. Features Fantastic Four in the first issue, and The Thing coming up with how to get Silver Surfer off of Earth after Galactus had imprisoned him there. So everything Reed had tried to do all over the years, nothing's working, super smart man. And The Thing is like, well, why don't you just try to leave without using your surfboard? And they're all like, I never tried that. And it works. So it's a great run. It has similar characteristics to this Fantastic Four we were just reading, where every issue has some standalone aspects to it while continuing a broader story. So that's what I recommend.
Yeah. Is this during the Second Kree-Skrull War?
Yeah, that's some of the background stuff. So it's the buildup. It's not the actual Kree-Skrull War. That comes in issues, I think it starts 24 through 31. But you get some buildup in there.
But dude, you're underselling this. It also has Parable from Stanley and Mobius.
That would make sense why they would call it Parable.
So it's a really good book you should have on your shelf. That's a beautiful book.
Yeah.
All right. Well, George, what are some other beautiful books you should have on your shelf?
In the spirit of recent comics, Superman Lost by Christopher Priest and Carlo Pagulayan. In the first issue, Superman and the Justice League are battling this weird thing at the bottom of the ocean. And then Superman's gone, and then he immediately reappears, except he's only gone for a second of our time. But for Superman, it's been 20 years. And the entire series is about like what Superman was up to for 20 years. It is spooky. It's uncomfortable. It's really interesting. It's really exciting. And this was the book that like I just like read it on a whim. And after that, I was like, I need comic books. And then I just like read like probably 60 issues like over the next 3 days. I like didn't sleep a lot, didn't watch a lot of TV, didn't do much in terms of self-care, except comic books, which is the ultimate form of self-care, as we all know. Incredible edge of my seat reading. So Superman Lost by Christopher Priest and Carlo Pagulayan.
You go. Bringing it back to Marvel here with my recommendation this week is I finally got around to reading She-Hulk. Yes, that's right. Rainbow Rowell's She-Hulk run. I heard so many great things about it. So I sat down and I read the first trade, first five issues of that original. I don't even know what volume it technically is, but it's awesome. And it harkens back to the John Byrne run of She-Hulk, which is one of our favorites, and a past episode of The Last Comic Shop that you can check out in our archives. Basically, She-Hulk is back to being a lawyer. She's splitting time between herself and her Jennifer Walters alter ego, but she's kind of down on her luck. She doesn't really have a lot of money, so Janet Van Dyne is letting her stay in the old apartment from Sensational She-Hulk and has all her clothes, which is just awesome. But it really starts hitting its stride in about issue 2 or 3, where they introduce Jack of Hearts, who becomes like her himbo, just kind of hanging out. And like Jack of Hearts originally was like a very tragic character. He couldn't eat or drink, and he was always radiating radiation, and it just was weird. And now he can eat pizza, and like he's more of a human being. He's kind of lost some of his powers, so he just kind of hangs out with She-Hulk, trying to be like, hey, what do normal people do, She-Hulk? And she's kind of taking him under his wing in that regard. But my favorite part about this particular run is that She-Hulk starts a fight club. That's right, Titania, who you may know from the She-Hulk television show if you're a big fan of that, long-time She-Hulk villain, they start fighting in the first issue. And you find out that really Titania just likes fighting She-Hulk because it's the only person that she can beat up on to release some stress. So they decide like, hey, Titania, you don't have to rob banks. We could just fight in the parking lot if you want to. And so they start doing that. They just start beating each other up. Volcano shows up, and then Ben Grimm's like, why didn't you invite me to the fight club? And so I feel like this is going to be a thing. And so it's really a lot of great, fun issues. So like I said about Philip Kennedy Johnson's Incredible Hulk series, which is going on right now, which is really good. And the reason why that's good is because it brings back the Hulk to his roots. This series brings She-Hulk back to her roots. A really great version of the character, which you can really pull for and is funny.
So, one thing on that. What's the first rule of She-Hulk Fight Club?
You don't tell Ben Grimm about it, evidently.
Oh, man. He's so going to be PO'd.
He was so mad. He's like, well, I could fight. Any case, Chad, what's your recommendation? Wrap us up.
Oh, boy. So this is a tough call for me this week because I am an unabashed Ryan North fan, and I was thinking we started by talking about, you know, the state of Marvel, and I actually discovered Marvel in one of my, like, last great time periods in 2015 when Ryan North was doing Squirrel Girl, Chip Zdarsky was doing Howard the Duck, there was that awesome Power Man and Iron Fist series, and Secret Wars was going on. You had all that stuff happening and all that great creative energy there. But my actual recommendation is going to be the team from Squirrel Girl. It was Ryan North and Erica Henderson from the first part of the Squirrel Girl run. They actually released an original graphic novel last year called Danger and Other Unknown Risks. It's a post-apocalyptic thing where on the Y2K, instead of the Y2K bug, technology wiping everybody out, magic does that thing. And it's aimed at teens. It gets a little bit dark sometimes, so I wouldn't dip much younger than that. If you have a couple hours to kill, or if you have teens in your life that you want to get hooked in, that appreciate things that are a little bit weird and off-kilter, I understand that Ryan North stuff isn't for everybody. But if it's for you, then you definitely owe it to yourself to seek out Danger and Other Unknown Risks, because it's tons of fun stuff. And if you're really bored, Google about the time that Ryan North fell into a hole and had to live tweet his way out.
Come on!
It's hilarious! It
tells you everything you need to know about Ryan North, too, if he names his dog Chomsky.
In any case, whatever your name of your dog is, we hope that you come back to the Last Comic Shop next week for more of the Merry Marvel March Society. All Marvel, all this month. Next week, we've got Rom the Space Knight with Mikey Wood. He's going to stop by to read the first 10 issues of that series that's finally back at Marvel. We got the Omnibus earlier this year. Oh, man, it's an exciting time. Have you accepted Rom as your Lord and Savior? I'm just asking.
You gave me a choice of episodes to appear on, and I wanted to choose Rom because I'd never read it. And I feel like an idiot where everyone's just like, oh, man, I remember grabbing Rom the Space. I'm like, no one was reading this book. No one cares about this book. Like, this has to be, like, the most elaborate practical joke that old nerds are playing on younger nerds ever. And the reason I turned it down, but I was like, no, this feels like a Mikey episode. I want to let Mikey cook on Rom, because I feel like dude has a
You know that he's like on Rom. eBay, scouring buy up like all the parts to build an old Rom Space Knight.
I assume toy. That's what he's doing right now. After this podcast, I like want to start a Twitter space, sorry, an X space. And I just want to see what Mikey's up to. It's been too long.
There you go. And even though the Omnibus came out, he's going to get his own personally bound one with a cover he's designed.
Oh, absolutely.
His own Romnibus.
Absolutely. But if you love Mikey Wood, stick around for next week's episode, as well as all the other great episodes of The Last Comic Shop over at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. You can listen to our episodes featuring Mikey Wood, episodes featuring George. He's been on past episodes. Go check those out, as well as episodes featuring the Fantastic Four, whether it was Fantastic Four Life Story, Fantastic Four Full Circle, whether it was other books by Ryan North, like Slaughterhouse-Five, his adaptation of that. We did that on the show. All that great stuff in our evergreen archives. Check it out today.
There you go. And while we might be the Last Comic Shop podcast, we don't want to be the Last Comic Shop. So we encourage everybody to get out there, seek out those issues of Ryan North's Fantastic Four. Seek out that Silver Surfer Parable, which, didn't we review Silver Surfer Parable?
We did. It's another thing you can check out on our archives. We're all over the map.
I do a lot of, like, whenever I do yard work or, like, basement, like, housework, really. You're actually my favorite podcast to listen to when I'm doing chores. I don't know what it is, but I feel like I'm not lifting the logs all by myself. I feel like I'm not chopping the wood all by myself. I feel like I got my buddies with me. So
that's awesome. Thank you, sir. Find Superman Lost, and then we can talk about that. Or She-Hulk by Rainbow Rowell. Or Danger and Other Unknown Risks. That's out there, too. And you can find these recommendations and more on the socials or at our website, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com, where they can find what else, Mr. J.A.?
Well, we've got a link to our merch store. You can get T-shirts, you can get coffee mugs, you can get tote bags, you can get gardening gloves. So if you want to go go and do some yard work while you're listening to the podcast. I think we need that in a quote somewhere. Rake your leaves while we rake the comic books.
And we hope really that not only you listen to the last comic book, but you listen to Short Box Summary. George is saying, there's not new episodes of Short Box Summary. That's because they're evergreen too. You can go back and listen to awesome episodes of Short Box Summary. George, tell them where they can listen to that awesome podcast as well.
Literally any place that you can download a podcast, you can find Short Box Summary. And they are evergreen. I'm going in order of Marvel continuity. And I started way back in 2004, baby. Like, we are going back to the 21st century and seeing how the eggs were broken for the omelet that were that was made. We're doing stuff with early 2000s comic books, and you're going to have a great time.
They're breaking eggs and making omelets, baby.
You got to put the potato chips on the omelet. That's what makes the omelet, if you've seen The Bear.
Yes, chef.
Dude, that Seven Fishes episode gave me, I had trauma watching that episode. Don't go in the kitchen.
I did not need very sweet but very opinionated Polish women yelling at me as we went through.
Jamie Lee Curtis with her cigarette dangling out of her mouth going, stay the f*** out of the kitchen.
God, I mean, I only see that when I close my eyes, but yeah.
Well, we hope that you don't have trauma for the last comic shop and you come back next week. Until then, I was those with most Danny Larson. I was joined by Chad Smith and Jay Scott, as well as the wonderful George from Short Box Summary. Make sure that you're checking out Short Box Summary. Yeah. Until next week, stay safe, stay fantastic, and remember that if Doom's a dinosaur, like, that's just going to sell papes.
Right, let's go back to the bear. He makes his own 7-Up. I don't think you can do that anymore.
Like, legally?
Yeah, they say lemon and lime. There's more to it than that. I don't know how he does it.
The Last Comic Shop Podcast was a 2024 Black Angus production.